Highline Radio, where the magazine that captures the spirit of the Bow Valley comes to life. Here are your hosts, Aaron Moroz and Christy Davison.
What up and welcome to Highline Radio. You're listening to Aaron and Christy. This week on the show, we've got an interview with yoga instructor and life coach Tracy Delfs. But first up, I'm here with Dave Verhulst, Executive Director of the Interpretive Guides Association. We're talking about the new climate change handbook. Thanks for joining us today, Dave.
It's good to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Interpretive Guides Association?
Yeah, the Interpretive Guides Association is a local non-for-profit organization, and our focus is providing training opportunities and ongoing learning opportunities for guides that work in the Rocky Mountains.
What's your background? How did you get involved in that organization?
Oh, I used to work as an interpretive guide locally. I spent some time doing some canoe guiding down the Athabasca River in Jasper. Spent a number of years in Lake Louise teaching cross-country skiing and grooming the trails there, as well as leading some tours. I did a little bit of work with Parks Canada, and I also spent some time at Dinosaur Provincial Park working as an interpreter there.
All right, thanks. Can you tell us what the reason was for putting out the climate change handbook?
Well, as you're probably aware, climate change is a pretty hot topic. And a number of years ago, we got a lot of questions from our guides within the association asking about climate change. And working as a guide, we found that a lot of people that were coming to the Rockies were seeing things like melting glaciers and just asking lots of questions about what's happening here and wanting to know more. So we brought in Bob Sanford, who you're probably familiar with, a local water expert as well as a climate expert, and he hooked us up with a fellow named Dr. David Sauchin, who's with the University of Regina and one of the IPCC scientists. And for 2 years in a row, we ran communicating climate change workshops with Bob and Dr. Sauchin. And one of the things that became really obvious after running those workshops was that people wanted more, and they wanted to have information in one spot where they could find it, because the climate change information, it's moving so fast and it's such a diverse array of information spread out in so many different areas. It's hard as a guide to find all those pieces of information, filter them, and then interpret them using good stories. So we thought that we would try and help them out by doing that for them.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about Dan Clark and how he got involved and why you wanted him to write the book?
Yeah, Dan Clark is a really long-time guide that spent a lot of time here in the Rockies doing some guiding as well as a lot of personal time out in the landscape. And he's got a degree in geography, and he currently works as a teacher in Kimberley. We originally hooked up with Dan for him to write our handbook for interpretive guides, and that's the textbook that we hand out during our courses. And we've just been getting rave reviews from all around the world, actually, for that book, because it's written in such a conversational, easy-to-read tone, and it worked really well for us. So when we thought about developing this book, the guy that naturally came to mind was Dan.
And how do you envision the handbook being used, just by the interpretive guides, or do you see the public getting a copy and looking into things themselves?
A bit of both. I mean, we wrote it primarily for interpretive guides because that, of course, is our target audience. So the tone that we took with this book was in speaking to those interpretive guides who are out in the landscape and dealing with the public that are coming to the park with all those questions about climate change. So our primary audience is interpretive guides for sure, but as with our handbook for interpretive guides, it's being used by a lot of different people that aren't necessarily working as guides, and we hope that this will be used by anybody that would like to get a background on global warming and in particular some information about global warming in the Rockies.
Excellent. What does the research show us about the impact of global warming in the Rockies?
Well, there's a number of things that are happening here in the Rockies, and some of the research has been done locally, for example, on the Pito Glacier. Other research we've pulled in from other areas that are similar, say from south of the border in the American Rockies. But what we're generally seeing is an increase in temperature, and the increase in temperature is most extreme overnight. So that's one of the things that's happening, and that's causing melting glaciers, which we're seeing in the landscape. And if you go to a place like the Athabasca Glacier, you can really see that firsthand with the signs that are marked out for each of the decades and how far that ice has retreated. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely one of the more obvious things. Other things that are happening is that tree line is increasing. There has also been some research that's been done on glacial lake color. So one of the reasons why our glacial lakes are the color they are is because of the glacial sediment that gets in the lakes. So in some areas, if the glaciers have retreated back far enough that they're not contributing very much sediment to those lakes are becoming more clear. So as they are becoming more clear, they're losing some of that color that that was originally part of them, and they're also changing the nutrient content within that water as well.
What impact is the expanding tree line and the retreating glaciers? What impact does that have on our ecosystem and like the animals that live in the area?
Yeah, it'll have a really varying impact depending on the animal, and that's one of the things that we get into in this book is we look at specific animals and how they're adapting in different areas. So I'll give you an example here. One of the animals that some research has been done on is actually the red squirrel, and that's really handy for interpretive guides because they're all over the place and just begging to be talked about as we take people through the landscape. And there's been some research done in the Yukon with red squirrels, and it's been found that they're actually adapting quite well to changing climate. They've adjusted their breeding timing to match the warmer spring and temperatures and the increase in food availability. And in the 1990s, three generations of red squirrels in the Yukon advanced their breeding by 18 days, or 6 days per generation. So that provided them with an advantage over other squirrels.
Yeah, and it's that specific, hey, their breeding time, that's interesting.
Yeah, and very fast for them. So with the red squirrel, it seems like they're doing okay and readily adapting.
Yeah.
Whereas if you look at some other members of the community, particularly the ones that are higher up, like the pika, it's a bit of a different story. And what's happening with the pika is that as alpine meadows shrink because tree line is changing and going up higher, and as snowpack is being being impacted as well, is that they're getting trapped in shrinking islands on top of the mountaintop.
Oh, right.
Because there's nowhere else for them to go. They have a very specific habitat up there.
Mm-hmm.
And as things get warmer and move up the mountain, they're losing out on their habitat. And essentially, they'll just end up getting pushed right off into the air.
Hmm. Interesting. What are some of the examples of the success stories besides the red squirrel? When it comes to global warming.
Yeah, what we really wanted to do with this book was to make sure people are aware that there are some things that are happening in the world and other places in the world that are really successful. And there's a few examples that we've listed in this book of other countries and things that they've been able to do. One is Sweden. They're striving to eliminate dependence on oil by 2020. And between 1973 and 2003, their oil consumption dropped from 77% to 32% by switching to biofuels, using renewable energy, and implementing carbon taxes. So there's a big success story.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that's often used and talked about is Denmark. There's a tiny island called Samsø that's in Denmark, and they use 100% renewable energy for heat and electricity. They've got wind turbines for electricity and solar power. They've got straw and wood chips that heat their houses. And they also grow canola that provides biodiesel for their vehicles.
Hmm.
And they've just taken the challenge on.
Yeah, so it can be done.
It can be done. And there's examples all over the world of really interesting things that are happening to address this.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me some examples of actions that individuals can take to reduce our impact?
Sure. Yeah, we have in here something actually kind of funny, and it's the adapting like a red squirrel. It's the red squirrel's top seven tips to reduce your footprint. Would
right
you like
on.
To know about the red squirrel's top seven tips? Number one.
Did a red squirrel actually write this?
We had to contract him out,
and
it was a little difficult to get the writing and translation correct, but we think we've got it nailed here. So number one, live in a smaller house. Squirrels live in tiny underground chambers carved into heaps of refuse cones. So communal living is more efficient, but most squirrels and people choose solitary dwellings. Apartment buildings have a 40% smaller ecological footprint than single detached homes.
That's very interesting.
Number two, use less water. Animals like red squirrels are extremely efficient with water, especially in winter. Unfortunately, most Canadians are not as efficient, using 340 liters of water per day.
Each of us uses 340 liters a day.
Yeah.
That seems ridiculous.
So we have some distance to gain there.
Yeah.
Number three, insulate your home. Red squirrels survive in the harshest winter conditions by living in a super well-insulated earthen home dug into their middens. Number four, live close to work, family, and friends. I think that one's fairly self-explanatory.
Yes, it is.
Eat locally is number five. Hmm. Squirrels build their homes right underneath the trees they collect their cones from. By comparison, a study of a Chicago supermarket found that the average food item had traveled 2,400 kilometers.
So stop eating Gala apples from New Zealand?
Yeah, when you go to the grocery store, have a look and find out where that food is
right.
coming from. And
there's a choice there. There is. There's ones from BC and ones from New Zealand.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Number six, reuse materials. Squirrels open the cones, shuck off the scales, and eat the seeds. Later, they dig their home into the piles of refuse scales. Reusing products that we have purchased keeps them out of the landfill and limits the number of new products that we need to purchase. And here in Banff, we have a great opportunity to compost a lot of the materials that we have coming, which has a huge impact on the amount of greenhouse gases that are produced by our waste.
Mm-hmm.
Number seven, travel wisely. So a big one of the big contributors to greenhouse gas emissions is travel, especially by air. So if we live closer to where we are and travel less, then that will have a big impact as well and help to curb the effects of global warming.
Hmm. All right. Very interesting.
Yeah.
How can people get a copy of this book?
Well, at the present time, the book is available exclusively through us. Through the Interpretive Guides Association, and you can log on to our website at www.interpretiveguides.org, and you can find a link there.
Thanks for coming on the show today, Dave.
It was good to be here.
After the break, we'll hear from life coach Tracy Delfs.
Highline Radio will be right back. Now back to Highline Radio. Here are your hosts, Aaron LaRose and Christy Davison.
Welcome back to Highline Radio.
Staying in shape involves more than just being fit. To find out more about what some of the Olympic athletes do, Kamara caught up with yoga instructor and life coach Tracy Delfs.
I'm here with the very busy Tracy Delfs, life coach and yoga teacher, and thanks for coming in today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, Tracy, you're doing so much. You're life coaching and doing massage therapy. You're the owner of Balance Quest, and you're doing retreats and workshops and yoga and meditation. If you had to fill out a form under occupation, what would you write? If you had one little line to fill out a form.
That's a good question. Well, I think, I know when I was doing my website, it made me really think about, well, what is my purpose? What am I up to here? And I think overall, all the different things I do are helping people to lead healthier and happier lives. So I think, you know, just that would be a big focus of mine, is just to really help people find the happiness within.
Cool. So how do you benefit most from the things that you practice?
Well, for sure, I can't imagine my life without practicing yoga and meditation. And I think the greatest gift from those is this idea of mindfulness, of living more in the present moment and just really learning to live every day of my life to the fullest.
Yeah. Can you go into a little bit more detail about the idea of mindfulness?
So mindfulness is really just learning to build this energy of being more present with everything that we're doing. So it's, you know, within a yoga practice, being really present. It's when we're eating our food, like to be really mindful of how the food tastes and eating with a sense of gratitude. When we're going for a walk in nature, to be really present to the surroundings around us, like noticing the light on the mountains, the sound of the birds, the flower, the sound of the river, the different smells, being really present with the people that you're with on a daily basis. I think living in the mountains, we're really fortunate because just by being here and being out in nature really helps you to live more in the moment as well.
How does someone reach this kind of state? What are the steps that they have to take?
Well, my mindfulness journey started 10 years ago when I went to a place called Plum Village in southern France to study with Thich Nhat Hanh. He's a Zen master, and in my mind, he's the guru or one of the gurus of mindfulness in the world. And he's written over 100 books. But when I went to Plum Village for the first time, that's when I was introduced to this concept of mindfulness. And so I spent a lot of time meditating and just in silence and just silent meals and just really, again, this building this idea of being more present with everything you're doing. So that's where my journey began. And then just since then, I really found that my yoga practice has really taught me how to live more in the moment.
And how can you tell if someone has successfully started to tap into the genre of mindfulness? What benefits will show in their life?
Well, I find I'm really fascinated by like seeing different public speakers and different musicians and just working with elite athletes. I just find people that are really at the top of their game in whatever area it might be, an art form, a sport, that they just have this presence about them where when you meet them and you interact with them or you just see them speak or listen to them sing, there's something different about them that sets them apart from other people.
And going into that topic of athletes, you're actually doing some work with the Olympic athletes. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, over the last 10 years, I've worked with quite a few Olympic teams. I've worked with alpine freestyle, cross country, and I'm currently working with a national biathlon team. And so it's fun. So I get to go over to Europe and go to the World Cups. And I do massage therapy with them and as well teach them yoga on a daily basis. And just within the different sports, like especially working with the biathlon team right now, this idea, again, of mindfulness, of being present is really important. When an athlete goes into a shooting range, every bullet they're shooting is they have to be fully present. If their mind wanders off, then their head's not in the game. It's going to definitely show up in the results.
And you were talking about kind of mindfulness where you're really focused on, you know, like you had mentioned earlier, with rock climbing or a certain type of sport or something. And then you kind of also tapped on brushing your teeth and eating. How does life benefit from being so in the moment, so present in the moment?
Well, I have this saying that I made up, and it's get out of your head and get into your life. And I think nowadays, especially with technology and the BlackBerries and the computer, and we're always being like pulled away from the present moment. The BlackBerry is going beep, beep, or the cell phone's ringing, or someone else is wanting your attention or wanting a piece of you. And just if we're not really being super conscious, I think our mind is always being distracted to different places, but as well, our mind tends to wander off into worry thought patterns. So worries about the what ifs of the futures or the would have could haves of the past. So just learning to be more present with everything we're doing. So when we're brushing our teeth, to just, you know, be really aware of how the toothbrush is moving and notice when the thoughts come up and let them go and come back to brushing our teeth. Or when we're, you know, washing the dishes, to actually feel like the temperature of the water and, you know, making washing dishes a mindfulness meditation. So the meditation, and definitely by doing seated meditation and focusing on your breathing, focusing on powerful words, can really be a great tool for building the muscles of mindfulness and being more present. But just starting to, you know, bring it into every daily activity really helps to build up that idea of presence.
And I wanted to ask you, are you from Canmore?
No, I'm originally from a farm 10 hours north of here, north of Grand Prairie.
Cool.
And but I've been living in the Bow Valley for 14 years now.
What is it about your clientele that you get in the Bow Valley that's what makes them different, if at all? Are they a different type of clientele?
Well, I think we kind of attract sort of like-minded people with what we do. And I know I have a reputation of teaching kind of more of the fun, casual kind of yoga classes. I like to laugh a lot and make people feel comfortable within the classes. So I feel the way we practice yoga is the way we should practice life. And so I don't think we should be that serious in life. So my yoga tends to be a bit more lighthearted and casual and just really mixed level classes. And I think people that are just starting feel comfortable in my classes, as well as people that have been there a long time, because I throw in the challenging stuff. So just, people that like to have fun and be in their body and just be with, I really like to build this sense of community within my classes as well.
And you also do, you just got back from a retreat on the weekend, is that true?
Well, you know what, we were going to be doing a retreat this weekend, and it was going to be focused on gratitude for Thanksgiving weekend, but as it was getting closer, I realized I wanted to be with my family, and I realized so did everybody else, because the registration is low, so we were going to do one again next spring instead, and I realized Thanksgiving weekend is time for family, not for doing yoga.
But what are the retreats, had you gone and not spent the day with your family, what are the retreats normally like?
Well, I usually do my retreats at Quantum Leaps Lodge, which is just outside of Golden, BC, and it's a beautiful location. And so we do yoga, a couple of yoga classes during the day. There's beautiful places to go for hikes around there, so we do some hiking. And then we usually add something like either a sweat lodge, so a traditional native sweat lodge, or fire walking, or something unique like that. And they have a beautiful labyrinth there, and it's along the river, and you can walk and walk along the river and just enjoy being out in nature. And then just a lot of discussion groups focusing on mindfulness and being present, or whatever the focus is for that retreat. And then this winter, Thomas Grandy and Sarah Renner and I are looking at doing some ski and yoga retreat days. So I have to watch out for those. So that should be fun.
You're doing so much, and I don't want to take away from anyone that would want to take your class who's listening and interested, but without giving everything away, is there anything that people can do at home right now who are listening that might want to start practicing a little bit more mindfulness and kind of living more in the present? Is there? Do you have any tips for people who are just hanging out at home?
Well, I think just one of the biggest things is to make a commitment to a mini meditation every day. And I find in the mornings and before you go to bed is the best time to meditate. And just to start off with literally 5 minutes a day, even if it's just 3 minutes, can make a difference. So just to sit down and just close your eyes and just start to become aware of your breathing. And I find breathing in through the nose and out through the nose like just a good way to really focus on the breath and just fully expanding lungs. But just to close your eyes and just start taking some deep breaths, like actually really does ground you into the moment. And then to use that tool anytime throughout the day, especially if you find that you're feeling stressed and you're in your head worried about stuff, just to stop whatever you're doing, close your eyes and take 3 deep breaths and just ground into the moment.
Great. And are you supposed to be thinking? Are you supposed to not be thinking? What should be going on other than focusing on your breathing? Or should that be the only thing?
No, basically, you want to just bring your attention to something. So it can be the breath, but a lot of people find it hard just to focus just on the breath. So there's a lot of just different mantras that you can do along. So just saying words that help you keep you present. So one of my favorite ones from Thich Nhat Hanh, who I studied with, is just breathing in, I'm breathing in, breathing out, I'm breathing out. And you can just repeat that over. Or you can go one leg in, out, deep, slow, calm, ease, and just keep repeating that. So in, out, deep, slow, calm, ease, and just with each breath. And then that just gives you an extra tool just to be even more present.
And you're super busy right now with some yoga videos. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's a pretty exciting project. I had this idea just from working with the athletes in Europe, and then I leave them and come back to Canmore, and they're like, what are we going to do? We need some yoga still. So they were the ones that wanted me to do a yoga video. So I had this idea of having more of a yoga influence at the Olympics in Vancouver. So I pitched the idea to the head marketer, Lululemon, about doing a yoga video for the athletes for the Olympics. And then to a friend of mine, Ian Finn, in Vancouver, that does a lot of yoga videos. And they were both keen to do it. So it's been this 2-year process. But this August, we all met in Whistler for a week. And there was 4 Olympic athletes that came. And then we filmed the video. So, yeah, it's very exciting. And it will be out in November. And just working with athletes for years, just tight hips and low backs is a major area of concern for athletes. So we focus a lot on that in this yoga video. And the name of the video is called Pursuit of Happy Hips. And it's kind of a fun video. And it's quite different than other yoga videos, too, because it has 3 of us teaching, and it's our voice interwoven within the video. And so, yeah, so I'm excited about it coming out.
Definitely. Yeah, you have so much going on. And briefly, we're almost out of time, but can you just kind of touch on your work as a life coach? What does that entail?
Well, life coaching, I'm very passionate about life coaching because it's really about helping people to get clarity about what's most important to them in their lives, like their core values and just really living a life that's fully in alignment with what's most important to them. So choosing a career that's in alignment with what's most important to them, where they live, partnerships, everything. And just from that place, if you're really living a life being true to yourself, you're going to be successful, happy, and content and find a place of inner peace. So it's really super rewarding to see the changes in people's life with life coaching. It's quite a simple process, but very powerful and profound.
How in my head I imagine you showing up someone's door with a whistle and some dumbbells. How did these lessons, you know, follow through?
The life coaching?
Yeah.
Well, most life coaches actually coach solely over the phone. I do some coaching over the phone. I have a client in England, in London, and I actually am coaching her this afternoon. When I leave here, I have to go back home and call her. And so it can be done remotely. So it's kind of cool because I've coached from the beach in San Francisco on my phone and different things like that, which is fun. But most of my clients are local. So that I have an office in Canmore and people come to my office. And it's just, really being present with them and just coaching them around what's going on with their life. So it might be they're making a big life choice, like, do I want to have a baby or not? Do I want to get married or not? Do I want to start a new career, a new business or not? Do I want to stay in the valley or not? And just really getting them clear about what they want to do and then holding them accountable. So there's that kind of whistleblowing part. Like you said, you wanted to do this and you're not actually doing it. So you have to use a bit of tough love to get them to where they really want to be in their life too.
Great. Well, I'm so happy you could come in. I'm sure there are a lot of people that are interested in all the millions of things you're up to. So do you have any contact information, website, anything you want to showcase?
Well, the best way to get a hold of me is just through my website. So balancequest.net, or if you just Google Balance Quest, then you can find me there. And and then it has my email and phone information and stuff too.
Great. Well, thank you for taking the time. I know you're super busy and I'm glad you could come out and talk to us.
Thank you so much.
That's it for the show this week. If you'd like to comment on the show, drop us a line at 403-762-1536 or email us at info@highlineonline.ca. Don't forget you can catch all our shows on the podcast at friendsofbanff.com. Plus, check out the latest magazine on our website, highlineonline.ca. Thanks for listening. Make sure to tune in next week for another Fix a Highline.
Highline Radio, from the creators of Highline Magazine. Visit them online at highlineonline.ca.